Started at Otter Away, Northwest London, Friday, 20th of Teves, 24th December. Rabbi Jeremy Golka. Subject is
Parsha, the making of Moshe Rabbeinu.
The making of Moshe Rabbeinu. This week's Torah is sponsored, jointly by family Blachman, Le'il Nishmas, Reb Moshe Dovid Ben Rav Avrom, Chanuch, Waldman, Zichron Lebracha, and by family Lofa, Lechvod Simchas, Hanisoin of Spencer Lofa and Adina Shaya, Yerotzen Shimon and Bias Nemon, Be Yisrael, Lashem, Be Lishilo.
Okay, good morning. I am a last-minute stand-in. The good news is that I don't get my photo plastered all over town. The bad news is you get to listen to me. So apologies, but let me share with you some ideas. Just some ideas, but now, Mr. Hashem, tomorrow we'll lay in Parsha Shemos, the second of the five books of Torah, and we are reintroduced to Moshe Rabbeinu and the whole story that we are very familiar with. Let me share some ideas with you, which I think a picture emerges as a little bit that we can understand who Moshe Rabbeinu is and why he has the status he has in Klal Yisrael. If you think about it, Moshe Rabbeinu's origins are very strange. He, as a baby, he of course is very meyuchas. He is a great grandson of Yaakov Avinu. Is the son of Yocheved, who's the daughter of Levi, the son of Yaakov Avinu. And his father, Amram, is the god of Ador, and he's only one generation further removed. So very meyuchas. But yet, he grows up as a prince in an Egyptian palace. So it's an unusual background. Rabbi Bernstein, Zichron Livracha, once said a vat, if any of you ever went to his famous Monday night shir. But Isaac Bernstein.
That's the answer.
Yeah. And I was in there, so I wasn't. But one time I went, I was in there, it's right at the time, but I went once there, and it's quite a sight to behold. It's, 200-300 people, and you can now get his shurim, they're easier to access. But he once introduced a vod, which I'm going to share with you now, and this is the master Baal Darshan, tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he said that this is the best vod that he's ever heard from anyone, anywhere. So with an intro like that, it makes you want to. It's quite a good intro. So this is what he said. He said he heard it from. He doesn't remember who. He doesn't say the name of the person, but he heard it from an alter yeka. And this is what he said. We know that Torah can be understood on parshas, pshat, remez, drush, and soed. So let's take a look at the beginning. Famous pasuk, first box. Vayhi bayomim ha'heim vayigdal Moshe. It was in those days Moshe Rabbeinu grew up. Vayetze el ochim, and he went out to his brothers. Echov. Vayar v'sivlois, and he saw their burdens. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri me'echov. And he saw the mitzri smite the ivri me'echov. Vayifen koi v'choy, and he looked this way and that way. Vayar ki enish, vayach is the mitzri v'ed m'nei v'chol. So the Poshut Pshat in the Pasuk is very straightforward. Moshe Rabbeinu goes out, he sees the Shibud of Klal Yisrael, he sees the Mitzri hit the Ivri, he looks around, there's no one around. Vayaches HaMitzri, Vayitmenei B'chol. But he wanted to say the following. In Drush, Moshe Rabbeinu is living, if you think about it, a very sort of a double life. On one hand his Mitzri, on one hand his Ivri. So, it's an inner turmoil that he has to deal with on a regular basis. Who am I? Am I them? Am I Ivri? Am I Mitzri? Who am I? So he has this inner tension, this turmoil that he has to live with. Now let's read the Pasuk again. Vayhi bayomim ha'heim. It was in those days. Vayigdal Moshe. And Moshe Rabbeinu, he grows up. Vayetze el echov. And he goes out and he sees Klal Yisrael. Vayar b'sivleison. And that heightens this inner tension. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri is referring to Moshe Rabbeinu himself. He sees this clash, this ish mitzri being make ish ivri, like I can't live with this tension, this turmoil. Vayifen koi v'choi, I look that way, I see I'm a mitzri, I see this way I'm an ivri. Vayar ki enish, you can't live like this. He decided he can't sit off the fence. Vayach es ha mitzri vayit b'nei v'chol. And he smote the mitzri part of him, and he decided, Ich bin Ayin. That was his take on it. Now, another interesting thing that that also emerges. The parasha, the pasuk before that says, "Va'idan ha'yelat, va'tveir lebas paro, va'hilo lebein, va'tikra shemay Moshe," and she calls his name Moshe. Because I drew him out of the water. Now we know that Moshe Rabbeinu has more than one name. The Medrash says he has 10 names. The Medrash says, if you look at the next box, Yud Shemos Nikra LeMoshe. He had 10 names. Yered, Chove, Yukutiel, Avigda, Visecha, Viznech, Tuvia, Shmaya. Some very beautiful names. But yet, we know that the name that stuck is Moshe. Why did that name stick? Why is it that the Torah refers to him as Moshe, seemingly everyone else refers to him as Moshe? Why, of all the beautiful names, why is it that, and it's Dafka, the name given to him by Bisya Bas Paro? So I once heard from Rabbi Beryl Wine, an amazing pshat based on the Sephara. Maybe you've been there, you've been to Yad Vashem, the famous Holocaust Museum in Eretz Yisrael. About 15 or so, 20 years ago maybe, they made a whole new section. It was the Children's Memorial. Children's Memorial. It's a very powerful new section of this museum. It was a family from Los Angeles, a very wealthy family. It was never one of the... they had a child who was lost in the Holocaust, and I think a sister of this child survived and dedicated in his memory. Anyway, you go into this section, you go into this memorial, and you're there in the Jerusalem sunlight, your eyes are dazzled by the sunlight, and you go into this building, dark. It's quite dark, very dark. And what you see is, you go and you're trying to see, like, what is it really? And you see that there's one candle in the middle of this round area, and the genius of the architect, what's he done? He's fashioned it in a way that there's mirrors and glass, that this one candle reflects to make 1.5 million points of light, which of course represents the 1.5 million children who died in the Holocaust. And as you go around, you just hear a recording of names, of children's names. So you hear Moshe Greenberg, age 3, Lvov. Sora Fine, age 2, Warsaw. And you hear name after name after name, as Beryl Wine says, until you can't take it anymore. And you're looking at these 1.5 little points of light and the names, and then you emerge on the other side and you come out and you
light.
And you hear the light again of the Jerusalem sunlight. And Beryl Wine said the following. He said, when I was going through that, and the Beryl Wine is of the age, he was born in the mid-1930s, he said, I was a child during the years of the Holocaust. He says, I didn't hear my name. I didn't hear my name. A survivor looks at life differently. It's a different way of looking at the world. And a person who survives, whether it's something as grand, as massive as that, or whether it's a car accident or a train or plane or whatever it may be, he looks at the life, at the world differently. And he sees himself as a survivor, that I've been saved and I've got to do something. Why was I saved? You ask that question. Moshe Rabbeinu says the Sephardim was called Moshe, that's the name we call him by, he was a baby going down the Nile. He was a goner. But, you know, there for the grace of God go I. And Bisya Bas Paro pulls him in. Every time Moshe Rabbeinu will be called Moshe, every time he'll be called Moshe, it will be a reminder that you survived. And you've therefore got to do something with your life. There's a mission which is destined for you. And therefore, every time he will be called Moshe, that will be a reminder of his mission in life. Now, Ibn Ezra is a very interesting Ibn Ezra, which I think builds on what we're saying. So Moshe Rabbeinu grows up in the palace of Paro, and as an Egyptian prince, and again, as the son of the god Ladur. Ask Ibn Ezra the question that we're grappling with. Why? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do it in this way? Says the Ibn Ezra, Ula, listen to this amazing Ibn Ezra, Klal Yisrael. Ula, Sibay Hashem Zer, Sheigad Moshe Beis HaMalchus, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated it, that he would grow up in the palace of the king, that he would grow up with the majesty of a palace, of royalty, that would give him a certain confidence, a certain nobility. Because if he would have grown up with the rest of Klal Yisrael as a slave, persecuted, that rubs off, that leaves an impact. Halotire, I'll show you that he has this confidence. Shehorag ha-Mitzri ba'avur shoy sechomos. He feels strong enough and confident enough to kill the Mitzri for doing this injustice. V'hishia b'nois midyon me'haroim, and he stands up again with the b'nois midyon, with the shepherds. Ba'avur shoy yo'esim chomos la'ashka seino me'amayim shedolu. So the first answer that Ibn Ezra gives is that in order for Moshe Rabbeinu to fulfill his mission in life, he has got to be instilled with a certain confidence, a certain grandeur. If you picture Moshe Rabbeinu going in front of Paro, it must have been terrifying. Going into the lion's den and then negotiating and reprimanding Paro, that takes a certain confidence. If you grow up as a slave, that's hard to muster. And therefore, says the Ibn Ezra, he grew up in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, orchestrated it in this way to give him that confidence. It's interesting. Rav Belsky, the Rosh Shiva of Torah Vadas, who was lifted in 2016, when he once reminisced about his early life. And maybe you've read, maybe you knew him, maybe you've read the biography. He was in a different league. He's a towering intellect, a very broad person. Anyway, a very interesting person, but a man of confidence. So he says when he was a youngster, when he was a baby, a child, his mother would put him to bed every night. And she would say Shema, and then she would sing a song. Now, if I'd give you 100 guesses, you wouldn't guess the song. Right? What song did, and she was the daughter of Rabbi Yochanan Vilhaim, who started Torah Vadas. She came from a very chosher family. What song did she sing? She sang, "You Are My Sunshine." If you don't know it, I'm not going to sing it for you. But I think we all know it. "You Are My Sunshine." So you know, but I thought, you know, Belsky, you grow up every night, your mother sings you that song. That instills you with the warmth, the feeling of being loved, and that gives a person a degree of confidence. I read a book last summer, a very interesting book. Someone gave me a present. So it's a book by someone called Joseph Telushkin. And he wrote a book about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. So I must be honest, I didn't know much about Lubavitch and about the Rebbe. It's a fascinating book. Absolutely fascinating. He spent 5 years writing it. He's not a Lubavitcher, this fellow. A very objective book, and it deals with all the issues, and it's held in high esteem in Lubavitch as well. It's a very fair and honest, a very interesting book. And he's got some amazing anecdotes in there. But he tells one anecdote, which I think it relates to what we're saying. In 2000, the vice president nominee, or the candidate, the vice president candidate in America was Senator Joe Lieberman. And he's a frum man, Shomer Shabbos. He, you know, he walks everywhere on Shabbos and causes the Secret Service a lot of headaches. And he came very close to becoming the vice president. So he said in 2000, he had to go to different cities in America. And the Secret Service had a rule that they would not disclose to the press which hotel they were staying in. It was top secret. So imagine they go to Chicago, there's lots of 5-star hotels. They'll stay in one, but they were top secret where they're going to stay. He said every time this happened, he went to the chosen hotel in the particular city, there was a meal waiting for them from the local Chabad Shliach. Right? How did they find out? Yeah. So he says somewhere in the book, again, I'm not so familiar with the whole world of the Lubavitch, but I understand that in the Chabad, in the Bachrim, they go out and they put on tefillin for people in the street. So you're standing in the street for a couple of hours a day, and you stop and say, "Excuse me, sir, are you Jewish? Can I put tefillin on you?" That makes your skin a little bit thick. It gives you a certain brazenness, a certain boldness, a certain confidence. But, you know, down the line, you can find out where Senator Joe Lieberman is going to be staying. But it's a person's life experience often gears you to the mission you have in life. And says the Ibn Ezra, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu grew up in the palace, because he needed that confidence, that regality that he wouldn't otherwise get. The other reason, interestingly, from Ibn Ezra, the last line of the third box, had he grown up amongst the Jewish people, they wouldn't have been scared of him. They wouldn't have shown him the reverence that one needs to show the leader of Klal Yisrael. Can you imagine the older people will say, I remember your upshir. I was at your shalom zacher. And now I'm going to listen to your psak. I'm going to listen and show reverence when you walk in the room. So it's not an easy thing to do.
I don't know the leader.
True. But there were people older than him. There was a Kalim, and certainly in the early years. And therefore, says the Ibn Ezra, the second reason why he didn't grow up in Klal Yisrael, as it were, is otherwise they wouldn't have given him the reverence that he needed. Okay, let's press on. A couple more ideas. The following I heard from our Pinchas Roberts. He says a very interesting thing. Why was Moshe Rabbeinu selected as a leader? What midas did he display? So I want to pick out two. The first, Rabbi Roberts says, and it's based on Midrashim, Rashi brings as well, that he was noisei be'olim chaveiro. Moshe Rabbeinu had empathy. He shared the burden with other people. The Pasuk says, when he came to the sneh, in this week's parsha, it says, Vayar v'ne asneh boyer bo'esh v'asneh enenu ukol. So the Rashi brings, later when it says Vayar v'sivlos on the Pasuk we said before, Rashi says, Nosem enov liboy v'yos meitzer aleihem. There's an amazing medrash. Look at this medrash, the top of the next page. Vayar v'sivlos. Umal vayar. Shayurai v'sivlos on the boiche. He saw Klal Yisrael being persecuted, and he cried. Let me die. I don't want to see the pain that Klal Yisrael encountering. There's nothing harder than working with cement. What did Moshe Rabbeinu do? He literally rolled up his sleeves. And he literally put in he started working and doing the hard labor with the rest of Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Loza ben Yosef Yosi Hadili Omer Ra'a Masu Godla al Kotam Masu Kotam al Godla. He would put the Mitzrayim, the torture was not just physical, but it was psychological. They would give men, they would give youngsters work which was fitting for an adult, and adults they would give what they would give little kids to do. Masu isha, isha, masu isha, isha. And men, they would give women's jobs, and women, they would give men's jobs. Masu zokin al bochra, for an older person, they would give a young man's job. Masu bochra al zokin. Vohi meniach dargan shalom. He left his palace. Vohoylechum meyashif lohem sivloseihem. And he would go and share the burdens of Klal Yisrael. Vohoyse ki'ilu mesayel paro, as if he's helping out paro, that I'm going to help, I'm going to control things. That was his subterfuge. Omra HaKadosh Baruch Hu, listen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Ato hinachto eskecho, you are leaving your own business, you're leaving the comfort of your palace, v'holachto liros b'tzaron shel Yisrael, and you're seeing the troubles, the pain of Klal Yisrael, v'nohagto bo'en minagachim, and you're showing brotherhood. Ani meniach esu'enyonim esatachtonim v'adabem. I'm going to leave my sojourn, and I'm going to speak to you. Hanu d'chsiv v'yar Hashem kisol liros. HaKadosh Baruch Hu moved away Lirois, Ra HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'Moshe Shesor me'asok of Lirois b'Sivlois. And that's what it means, Vayar Kisar Lirois. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw the Moshe Rabbeinu turned away from his life of comfort and rolled up his sleeves and helped Klal Yisrael. So to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's that feeling of empathy which is really the making of a leader of Klal Yisrael. They tell a Maisa, the Rav Shneur Kotler, the Rosh Hashiva of Torah of Lakewood, the son of Rav Aaron, he got engaged in 1940 to the daughter of Malkiel Friedman, Rebbetzin Rishel Kotler, but he didn't get married for 5 years because he managed to escape from Europe and he went to Eretz Yisrael. He learned by Zayda, this is Amma Meltzer during the war years, but his fiance, the Kala, she went. So she managed to get out to Shanghai with the Meir Yeshiva, and they were only reunited in 1945. So during the war years, he was learning in Eitz Chaim with his Zayda, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, and then after the war, he went back to America to get married, and his Zayda was too old to travel, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, and he came to take leave because the car was waiting outside to take him to the airport. He went to say goodbye to his Zayda. And Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, who he was very close with, he was there all the war years, he didn't take him out to see him out, to walk into the car. Instead, he walked him out of his apartment building. He walked down a few stairs. He then embraced him then, gave him brachas, and went back to his apartment. So someone said to him afterwards, why didn't you walk into the car? you know, your Einuchel's getting married, why don't you go? So this is on Meltzer said. He says, we're living, it's 1945. He says, there are many grandparents who don't have, whose children didn't escape Europe. They're here in Eretz Yisrael. I can't enjoy the moment of an Einuchel getting married to the full when others haven't got that privilege. That demonstration of Imoy Anochi Betzara. And then, and he went back, interestingly, just as a side anecdote, Reb Shneur Kotler was nifted in 1982. And he served as Rosh Shiva of Lakewood for 19 years, 7 months, and 1 day, which was exactly to the day, the number of years, that his father, Reb Aaron Kotler, was Rosh Shiva of Lakewood. 19 years, 7 months, and 1 day. And those, you know, the Torah world, at the time, they felt it was a tremendous comfort. As it were, he died young, he was 64. But they saw that it was a sign, if you like, from Shemayim, that he was a worthy successor of his father's legacy of building Torah in America. But an amazing coincidence, if there's such a thing. And Rabbi Roberts added, interestingly, that feeling of empathy explains an interesting question. Gemara Brachos Memches on the base tells us the famous Gemara, Hatoiva Meitiv, Yavne Tiknuho. It was instituted in Yavne, on Keneged Haruge Beita, that the Nebuch, a few decades after the Churban by Sheni, there was the massacre in Beita, and the Romans didn't allow the Jews to be buried. So there were corpses lying in the streets. It says the Gemara Domer of Masna, Oysa Yom Shenitnu Haruge Beita Mikvura, when they were allowed to be buried, Tiknu Beyavne Hatoiv Ametiv. The double expression, Hatoiv Shlo Yisrichu, fine, so they instituted this bracha. The question is, why in benching? Why do we say it in benching? There are other occasions we could say it. So why do we dafka say it in benching? So Rabbi Roberts' take was this. Imagine, Rahman al-Islam, you're during that time where the mason are outside, and they didn't give rishus to bury the mason. You're sitting inside, you can enjoy your lunch, you're sitting having a meal, and there's Mason lying in the hot, you know, Israeli sun. How could they? They couldn't enjoy. They could only, once the miracle happened, the bodies didn't decompose, and they were allowed to bury them, then, and only then, could I enjoy my meals. Could I enjoy. To remind us of that fact that I can't enjoy things when things for Klal Yisrael are not going so well, we instituted it in benching, in Birchas HaMozen, the bracha of Hatoiv Ametiv is a constant reminder that we shouldn't enjoy things when others are having a difficult time. Okay, one final idea. This is another sort of ingredient, if you like, in making the Moshe Rabbeinu, which is the famous kasha from next week's parsha, Parshas Vayera. Next week's parsha contains one of the 10 kal v'chomers in the Torah. What's the kal v'chomer? Moshe Rabbeinu himself says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, go speak to Paro, Yishalach es b'nei Yisrael me'aretzoy. And Moshe Rabbeinu responds and says, "Hein b'nei Yisrael leishamu elai." If already the b'nei Yisrael, who have got a vested interest to leave Mitzrayim, they're being persecuted. If they're not listening to me, ve'ich nishmoeni paro. So how on earth is Paro going to listen? So the famous question is that there's a pircha to the kal v'chomer. What's the pircha? What's the refutation of the kal v'chomer? That what? The pasuk says, "Vaniaras v'sayim." The reason why Klal Yisrael are not listening to you, Moshe Rabbeinu, is for 1,000 reasons. Yeah, because they're persecuted, they haven't got the head to listen, or but 1,000 reasons. But maybe Paro is sitting in the luxury of his palace, and is not persecuted, and he's got the headspace to listen to you. Maybe he will listen. So there's a pircha to the kal v'chomer. But what was Moshe Rabbeinu thinking? So there are different answers to this. In short, the answer that I think stimmers and fits in so well with the Pasuk, I once heard from Avraham Rivlin. He said the following thing. He said Moshe Rabbeinu was onav mikol adam. Imagine the following scene. A person, a teacher in a classroom, right? He walks out of the class, it was a disaster. He comes to the staff room, he comes into my office and says, terrible. He goes, that class are impossible. They're unteachable. That's one response. The other response is he comes into me, into the staff room, and says, "Listen, I'm not engaging them. Give me some better sort of classroom techniques and tools that I can engage my students." Have you ever taught this class before? How can I engage them? The difference between the two approaches is that the first is a bit guy-for-dick. I'm a great teacher, but these kids are a little problematic. They're unteachable. The second response is, they're good kids, it's just that I'm not doing it. Help me engage them. That's the difference. Moshe Rabbeinu sees the Klal Yisrael aren't listening. He puts the problem on him. It's not because of them. I'm not engaging. I'm not a good speaker. I'm not eloquent. I'm not convincing enough. The mark of a great leader is humility. That is, and you see that down the line. And humility, by the way, does not mean timid, sitting and not... that's not humility. They say a story with Shlomo Zalman. On one hand, Shlomo Zalman, many of you knew him and met him, and it was a tremendous honor. And was modest and quiet. There's a famous Moyan in Yerushalayim, Rabbi Yosef. Yeah, he did thousands of bris. So he was in Yerushalayim. So many times, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman was the sambuk. And whenever he was there, he would call out, Hagon, Hagon, and of course, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva. One night, Rabbi Yosef gets a call. Who is it? Shlomo Zalman. Yeah, which Shlomo Zalman? I know many Shlomo Zalman. So he said, Shlomo Zalman Arbach. Well, how can I help him? He said, look, please don't call out the way you call out. Just call out Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach. Yeah, Mechubit. And he said, and if you continue to call out with these grand appellations, then I will refuse to be a sandak at a bris where you're the Moel. That's what he said. So he was a big honor. Yet, there was a Maisa once. There was a child who needed to go to a special needs school. And the parents knew it was the best place for him, but the child didn't, so he wasn't playing ball. Didn't want to go. So, Rav Shlomo Zalman called this child. He said to the parents, let me speak to the child. So the child was sent, he said to the child, look, there's a certain place that I'm worried about the general Ruchnia standing there, and I need to put someone on the ground, a mashkiach, in the actual school. He says, I want you to do the job, and I want you to come back to me. And he goes, I don't know who you know I am, but I am Shlomo Zalman Arbach. I am one of the Gedolim in Klal Yisrael, and I'm the Rosh Yeshiva of Kol Teres Yeshiva, and I, etc., etc. Right? So he knew who he was. But yet, he tells Rabbi Yosef, don't call me up like that. Anivus is knowing who you are, but there's a certain modesty, there's a certain way of behaving. I had a friend who learned in Ibsvi Kushelevsky's Yeshiva. So one time there was some sort of knesset gathering or something, and Tzvi was one of the leaders of Shivas, was on the dais at the front. And they were calling him up to speak. Again, a very generous introduction. All of it is MS for Tzvi. A very generous introduction. And my friend saw, he was nearby, he heard Tzvi muttering under his breath. So what does the Shiva Bacha do when he wants to? He gets closer, right? So he gets closer and he puts his in it and he can hear. He's muttering under his breath. Hakina v'hataiva v'hakovod metzines adam in oilam. Muttering under his breath. Because, that's the anivus of Klal Yisrael. So what have we seen? So we've seen interesting sort of pieces in the jigsaw puzzle that is Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's the jigsaw puzzle pieces of Moshe Rabbeinu. The first piece is that Moshe Rabbeinu's double life, that magnificent idea that it's referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri vayifen kai v'chay. It's referring to him. That he's got this dual loyalty, this double standard, this clash, this tension the whole time. Vayar ki enish, you can't live like that. Vayaches ham mitzri. Then we saw that why did Moshe Rabbeinu, of all the names that the name Moshe stuck, because survivors live differently. Every time he'll be called Moshe, ki min amayim mishisiu, they'll see that he's saved with a mission in mind. And then we see that amazing Ibn Ezra, why was he growing, why did Hakadosh Baruch Hu orchestrate things, he grows up in the palace of the king, to give him that confidence, that nobility that he would need to fulfill his life's mission. And the two minutes that we saw, the empathy and the humility, which is the marking of any great leader.
On Sunday only, extended program at Oracle Lodge, which plays 9:15 to 10:30 on Sunday only. From Monday onward, we're here 9:10 the whole week.
She fed them. So she was
in the stomach.